What's happening, everyone? This is the Celtics Talk Podcast, and I'm Kyle Draper, joined, as always, by NBCSportsBoston.com Celtics insider, A. Sherrod Blakely. What's up, Sherrod? You stretching over there? Late night last night or something?
Hey, man, I'm just winning. That's what happens when you win, man. You got to celebrate the wins.
All you do is win, win. The Celtics, 14 straight wins after beating the Golden State Warriors. We're going to dive into that coming up in just a little bit. We got Sam Amick of USA Today, plus an interview with Scal and Stevens. That's all coming up. But I got to remind you, we're coming to you from the Cumberland Farms Lounge at our NBC Sports Boston studios. Cumberland Farms coffee is just 99 cents any size. That's 99 good reasons to switch. All right, Sherrod, let's jump into it. They beat the Golden freaking State Warriors. I'm still in shock because for about 2.5 quarters, it was clear Golden State was the best team.
It was.
They dominated, built a 17-point lead twice.
And the sad part about that was when you're watching Golden State at that point, you're thinking they're not even playing their best basketball, and they're up by 17. But they went through a lull, and Celtics put a lot of teams through lulls. And next thing you know, a shot goes down here, a stop is made there, and then you got a ball game. And I thought as we got deeper into the game and that score wasn't really moving – that's not good for Golden State because they're all about getting buckets. And they can defend, but their offense really in many, many nights is their best defense. And when they weren't making shots, the Celtics did what you're supposed to do.
I mean, for the Celtics to go on a 19-0 run, that's unheard of against a team the quality of a Golden State. I felt like Golden State, Steph Curry got a little shook out there, like he wasn't and give the Celtics credit, but give that crowd credit too, Sherrod. Some players weren't ready. Like Kevon Looney had a late turnover. He was not ready.
He
was
shook. He shouldn't have been on the floor.
He was not ready for that moment.
When you're playing a game like that, the top two teams in the NBA, not everyone is built for that moment. Not everybody is built to be able to be on the floor and actually play the way they did when they're playing like the Sacramentos and the Memphises and teams that, you know, aren't Golden State or aren't the Boston Celtics. But Looney looked a little loopy out there at that moment. I know
Looney looked loopy.
There was that one specific turnover that he had where the ball literally
hit him in the hands. It was right there.
It was like me throwing you a pass. I would expect you to do that, but not Looney.
not an NBA player. We're going to talk about Jaylen Brown in a minute, but so much talk has been made, you know, about this winning streak. And do you think the win over Golden State, not necessarily – solidified it or cemented it or whatever the word I'm looking for. But does this make them, talking about the Celtics, finals favorites to get to the finals?
No. It doesn't.
Whoa.
You asked me a question, and I gave you an answer, but you don't want me to elaborate.
No, I know you're going to give me your opinion, but hold up here.
Hold up.
Usually you're drinking the Kool-Aid. You're like the stock market, up and down, up and down. Well, now all of a sudden you're trying to be the voice of reason on the show?
That keg of Kool-Aid is in the back of your trunk, okay? Because you were definitely taking ownership of that. And I say no because it's still too early. Yeah. Now, the Celtics, and they talk about this all the time, the season is like a marathon, blah, 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 blah. And you know what? They're right. And when you're running a marathon, there are certain points in the race that when you get to that point, you get a chance to assess where you are relative to all those around you. Now, right now, at this point, yeah, the Celtics should feel good about themselves. But they know damn well that being number one in November is a lot different than being number one or number two in March or April. And that's really what this is about, positioning yourself so that when you go into the playoffs, you're playing your best basketball. You are a team that should have expectations of greatness because you've played a great season. And that's what I think has a lot of teams in the East a little shook right now because they're watching the Celtics team play, and they know damn well this Celtics team is not playing their best basketball. They're getting it done defensively, but when you look at what they're doing as a collective body, there's a lot of room to get better. And that's the thing that if you're like Toronto, if you're like Washington, if you're like Milwaukee, you think like, damn, they're beating everybody, and I know that's not their best
game. But hold up. My guy Charles Barkley, the Hall of Famer.
I'm glad you got the positives about him out the front because he was on some
played
real
for the
stuff.
Philadelphia 76ers, so you know he's my guy because of that. But he said during halftime of the game that the Celtics wouldn't be favored against not only Cleveland, but Toronto or Washington. Now, afterwards, he took that back
Oh, he bit, went Deion Sanders yeah, he, on the crowd and started going in backpedal motion. I got you.
He
okay.
backpedaled, that's for sure. But, you know, are you buying any of that? I mean, can they beat Toronto?
Yes.
Obviously. But can they lose to Toronto,
yes.
too?
Yes. And that's the thing. That's why for the Celtics, they have – and we talked about this the other day. They have to inflict psychological warfare on teams after teams to get those teams to actually believe that the Celtics are probably better than we think. We need to be worried about them because San Antonio, when they came in here, they exercised that demon yep. when they beat them.
Toronto, but that's no Kawhi Leonard. That's no Kawhi Leonard. That don't count.
Like that really matters in San Antonio. Last I checked, they started the season off 4-0, and they have no Kawhi Leonard. But when you talk about Toronto, that was another team that has had the Celtics' number. They dealt with that. Golden State in the TD Garden has had their number. Yeah. They exercised that demon. And to me, that is what the Celtics have to do, even with this cut-and-paste group that they're putting together, minus Gordon Hayward. They have to go out there and put seeds of doubt in the minds of teams that, you know what, you might step on the floor with us. You better bring your game because you're going to lose if you don't.
And the greatest thing about that win over the Warriors, Kyrie Irving didn't play that well.
Oh, he was garbage.
He was pretty much a non-factor the first three quarters of the game.
Right. And Draymond, and I give Draymond props.
After the game, I
asked him about Kyrie, and, you know, I'm thinking that he's gonna give me like, oh, he was garbage. He said, you know, Kyrie, he just made some free throws. That's it. And so he basically went there without really going there.
Ouch.
But this is the thing about Kyrie though. As bad as he played, and that if you go to say, you got to feel even worse. Kyrie goes 4-for-16, and you lose. Hey, Marcus Smart,
you can say the other way. Klay and Steph go what 7-of-28?
They're 8-for-32,
and they were right there, and so. You know, if you're either team, obviously if you're the Celtics, you're feeling better. But if you're Golden State, you're like, and Brad said it, Steph and Klay ain't going to shoot that bad.
Nah, I mean, and Brad was right when he said, you better win that game.
Yeah, you better win that game.
Because if you don't, you got problems. If those guys struggle like that, you can't get that W.
But I brought up Kyrie because he didn't have a game, but Jaylen Brown did.
Yeah.
Jaylen Brown was the best Celtic last night.
Jaylen Brown.
At the time, he was the best player on the floor last night.
I'll put those chips on the table and say he was the best player from the beginning of that game to the very end.
Ooh.
And as good as Kevin Durant was, because Kevin had an efficient 24
he
points,
was very good.
9-for-18
yeah.
shooting. But Jaylen, statistically, right there with him.
Yep.
And made a bigger impact in Sarge intangible. Because that turnover that he caused KD to – into making
yeah.
where Katie over and back over
at,
and back
at the half court line,
at
yep.
half court. Little things like that Jaylen did all game long. And I'm thinking like, you know what? You're not as good as Kevin Durant, but tonight you are. Tonight you are. On this night.
All right, I'll give you that. But, you know, the thing about Jaylen, obviously playing with a heavy heart
right.
Because of the death of his friend, but he looked like a man on a mission. And that's the thing I love about Jaylen. He's not scared of the moment, Shirai.
No.
He welcomes that challenge. You know, he even had mentioned it post-game. When he was out there, he didn't notice anybody else. He was just playing basketball.
Right.
And that dude is a beast. And so many people want to talk about, you know, Jason Tatum, who's having a great rookie year. And people forget, Jaylen Brown, when it's time to make plays on the biggest of stages, I think Brad Stevens knows he can count on Jaylen Brown. You know, Jaylen won't back down. It may not be efficient. May not always get the job done, but you don't have to worry about Jaylen Brown being scared.
And unlike a lot of young players, Jaylen doesn't just rise up to the moment when he's having a great night. He's had games where he has been absolutely crap shooting the ball. And yet in the fourth quarter, who driving to the hole but Jaylen?
Yeah.
Finishing the play. Who's taking that corner three? Jaylen knocking it down. He understands that regardless of what I do for three plus quarters, in the fourth quarter, I got to get the job done. Get it done, no excuses. I have to be that dude. And if Kyrie is going to be Kyrie and teams are going to lock in on him and just force him to really be more of a facilitator, mm-hmm. I got to be the guy he's facilitating to.
Yeah, and Jaylen did his thing. The Celtics defense did his thing. We're going to talk to Sam Amick about that defense coming up in just a little bit and also about Kyrie Irving. But defensively, and Scal said it postgame, last night proved this defense is real. Are you buying this defense – the way they've been able to shut down star players. Is this the real thing or is it still too early?
This is real. Because and I'm gonna tell you why it's real. It's real because the guys that they're shutting down now, those guys may play better going forward, but those seeds of doubt have been planted. You know, if you Giannis Antetokounmpo and you got the ball and they throw Shimi Ogele in there, guess what? You are not getting deep post position. You better get ready to pull up for a three or pull up for a mid-range because you're not backing him down. The Celtics and Shimi, he's not even one of the top three or four defenders.
Right.
So that's, to me, that's the beauty of this team defensively. They got guys who were like basically – If you looked at their team and said you got varsity JV freshman defensive players, their freshmen are busting your varsity offensive players. That does not happen.
That, you're right about that. All right, let's dive into our interview now with Sam Amick of USA Today. Sam Amick joining us now on the Celtics Talk podcast. Sam, thanks for coming on the Celtics Talk podcast. Obviously, here in Boston, we're fired up about last night's win over the Golden State Warriors. What impressed you about what the Celtics were able to do last night?
Guys, I mean, the obvious answer, the accurate answer, and by the way, thanks for having me. I appreciate it, is that defense. I mean, it's something else to watch. You know, I've been watching closely and trying to get a better sense of what those guys do on that end, how they're pulling this off. As you guys know, you see it all the time. You know, it's a magic trick of sorts when you got a guy in Kyrie who's not known as a defender and some other guys that maybe in a vacuum didn't have that reputation, and they're not only the top defense in the league, but they, you know, top defense by a long shot. So, you know, that's all well and good, but it's one thing to do it against, you know, the other 28 teams. It's another to do it against this Warriors juggernaut that I spent a lot of time around. And to see Steph struggle like he did, to see Klay miss shots, and to see those guys finish with 88 points was something else.
Yeah, and Sam, you touched on it there with Kyrie Irving. As you mentioned, he is not known for his defense. Kind of for many years was seen as a turnstile defensively. You just kind of go through easy pass,
right.
Easy lane.
exactly.
But how much has – This start with Boston changed the narrative as far as how Kyrie is viewed from a national perspective?
I mean, I'm still going to throw the qualifier on it. And granted, it's the fact that the schedule got stretched out. You know, you look at the calendar and it's like, man, it's November 17th. In fact, I was giving our friend and colleague Chris Mannix a hard time because from the Vertical, he wrote a column saying, I'm all in on Boston. I'm not going to doubt him anymore. And I 100% understand why, but it's still November 17th. So, like, that's the qualifier that I will put on this. But, right now, the way the narrative is going is that Kyrie, you know, knew what he wanted over the summer, knew how and why it would be different than his Cleveland experience. And to his credit, you know, he's putting his money where his mouth is, so to speak. And he's not only doing it with his own play, and let's not, you know, I love how nuanced his performance has been. His numbers are not completely jumping off the page, but you got the defense, you got the leadership that you keep hearing about with the young guys and the way that he's supporting them. You know, it's an extremely positive narrative for Kyrie, and I think people are watching closely because, you know, we've had plenty of trade demands in the past when it comes to NBA history, but his was kind of unique, the way that he just kind of cold-blooded late in the summer goes and meets with the owner and nobody really saw it coming and just kind of says, yeah, I'm ready for something new. And right now, you know, he's making the most of it.
Yeah, Sam, you know, continuing along those lines, there's a lot of talk about Kyrie MVP conversation. I'm not there ready quite yet to put him in that conversation because I could argue with this Celtics team, as great as it's been, it sort of reminds me of that Pistons team you know, back in 2004, you know, with
my team,
your team, Sherrod's squad. And so, you know, as well as Kyrie is playing, you look at the numbers, they're down from last year. I think Al Horford has been an equally big part to this
right.
Celtics start. Where do you rank Kyrie? I know it's early, 16 games in, but how responsible is Kyrie for what's happening with these Celtics, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. The better the team, this is going to sound like a funny comment, but the better the team, sometimes the tougher to judge, you know, what a guy is doing. And I'm with you on Al, and, you know, I think that's a legit opinion. And, you know, another colleague of ours, I just heard talking about this, Paul Flannery of SB Nation, who's in Boston, as you guys know, said the same exact thing, that he would argue that Al has been the Celtics' best player. And so, beyond, you know, league-wide, we have an MVP rankings every single week, and I know it's absurd that we're doing this so early in the season, But, you know, Kyrie so far had been on the outside looking in of the top five. You know, you had names like James Harden, Giannis, LeBron, all the way down the line. Kyrie wasn't there just yet. But I also – I'm trying to give him his just due by really analyzing what he's doing, because the Warriors situation has taught me that you really got to – you got to dig deep on some of the different layers of how a guy impacts a team. You know, Steph Curry's a good example where all of a sudden, in some ways, – Kyrie and Steph find themselves in a similar boat when it comes to the way people look at them, because, you know, Steph's numbers are not always as outrageous as they were a couple of seasons ago when he was winning back-to-back MVPs, but you got to really try to learn how he impacts the game. There's a little bit of that with Kyrie, so, you know, he's not on that short list, but he's playing really well.
And when you talk about playing well, I mean, obviously the Celtics as a collective group have played really, really well, to the point where you've got lots of people praising them. You know, Steve Kerr talked about them as, you know, being, you know, the future of the Eastern Conference. Where do you see the Celtics in the grand scheme of things? I mean, are they the team of the future in the East?
They very well might be. You know what I mean? Like, I Philly just rolled through my part of the country recently, and I enjoyed getting a front row seat to the Embiid and Simmons show and seeing what those guys had going on. But I think everybody who, you know, there's been some stuff on social media today where folks almost act offended that the Celtics are getting deemed the team of the future in the East because, hey, what about Philly? It's like, all right, people, hold on a second.
What about Philly?
Can we get a playoff appearance?
Yeah,
Philly?
Thank you. Cool. That's what I was going to say. Like, Boston was in the conference finals last year. Boston had the number one seed, and obviously changes have been made, but there's still players who were a major part of that last season. So, in terms of the future, it's absolutely Boston. Now, the part I love about that is that, you know, LeBron saw those headlines. You know, LeBron, you know, lets that stuff get under his skin and lets that stuff motivate him. So he'll have something to say about it. And I also, Steve Kerr is an A+. He's not a troll because that doesn't give him enough credit, but he is a calculated spokesman, so to speak, and he always knows exactly what he's doing. So from that aspect, part of me, you know, wondered if he had any motivation to kind of send that message. But they have a ton going for him, and you know, it's going to be a bright future for sure.
Yeah, you talk about future, but is that future now? I mean, could the Celtics, how realistic can they challenge the Cleveland Cavaliers in the East this year? And is this the Celtics year maybe to take that next step?
Certainly could be. And I'm dying to see what the next few months hold, because you guys have been talking about this all season long. I'm sure, you know, this stuff would be compelling enough in Boston, you know, if that's all it was. But you got this elephant in the room of the, you know, beloved Isaiah Thomas coming back for the Cavs at some point here, you know, in the pretty near future. And that's going to be a major X factor to that question, because, you know, is it their time? Absolutely could be. I think that psychologically, having Kyrie in your locker room should allow you to convince yourself, and with his kind of leadership, like, guys, we can do this year, knock LeBron out of the finals, let's do it. But then, you know, again, the X factor, how is Isaiah going to look? How's he going to play? We talked the other day for an interview, and you guys know him well. I mean, motivation at an extremely high level. He's hearing everything, seeing everything. He knows people think he's not going to be able to come back and be the same guy. So, I mean, that's kind of a major factor that we just don't know the answer to just yet.
Well, yeah, you know, you touched on a piece you wrote recently about Isaiah Thomas. In talking with him and just in talking with others around the league, what's the sense that you're getting as far as his impact when he returns? Because obviously Cleveland has got some problems right now. How do you think Isaiah Thomas and his return is going to help or address or improve the situation in Cleveland?
I mean, you know, taking him at his word, we talked over the phone for quite a while, and, you know, you obviously can tell things like tone and confidence and all those things. I feel like if there were alarm bells going off in his head and he was having concerns about, oh boy, I better brace the world for the fact that it's really going to take me a while to look anything like I used to look, then he would probably set that tone, you know, in his conversations. And he didn't really do that. You know, he was all in on the idea that, you know, he didn't use the word revenge, but this is to an extent kind of his revenge tour, where at the end of the chat, I kind of shamelessly said to him, you know, what would it feel like if you guys ended up getting to the finals and you just happened to kind of roll over the Celtics on the way there. And he said, oh, that would be lovely. You know, and the way he said it was, you know, I didn't see his face, but I guarantee you he had a grin on his face.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, that's a major factor. I mean, I like him a lot. And I know we don't root for the teams because we just cover the league, but we're all people. And he's a very, 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 I think, an admirable guy and a guy who's easy to root for. And so in terms of health and his career, I certainly hope that he can be the same guy.
Yeah, no doubt. Sam Amick of USA Today. Sam, one guy closer to home here that fans are rooting for is Gordon Hayward. He was right behind the Celtics bench last night for that big Warriors win. When you talk about, you know, best case scenario for this Celtics team and Gordon Hayward, let's say he does come back. Obviously, you know, he's not going to be 100% himself. But, you know, what does a Gordon Hayward, even maybe an 80% Gordon Hayward, do for them against, let's say, a team like Cleveland? And what kind of best-case scenario can we expect for the Celtics come, you know, when it really matters the most, and I'm talking April and May?
I mean, you know, on paper, it would be a great addition. And then, obviously, it would be something of, you know, we would have to watch and see how they integrate all the different pieces. And I can't remember a year, guys, where we've had so many relevant teams facing similar challenges when it comes to working in new pieces from Houston to Oklahoma City, you know, and certainly the Celtics and the Cavs are struggling with it. So the key would be, you know, how quickly could they get on the same page and what's the timing in terms of if he did come back. You know, everybody that I talk to, and you guys are closer to it than I am, but still kind of seems to be leaning towards, you know, just don't get excited about seeing him. You might not see him this season. But if he could be 80, 90% of what he was before, it's a major plus because it's the talent is at such a high level when it comes to the elite teams right now that you just need another playmaker, another guy who can score, another guy who can defend. And, you know, and also as an offshoot of that, guys, you know, I've been like waving the Jason Tatum flag like crazy all season long. He's been incredible. But we saw a little bit last night where you just got reminded that he's a rookie and, you know, and he, there's going to be a little bit of inconsistency. So the idea of, you know, Jason being able to share minutes with Gordon and having even more depth at that position, I think would be big.
Absolutely. And having you on the podcast is big for us, Sam Amick.
Appreciate you guys.
Thanks for jumping
on
with us,
Sam. Appreciate it, man. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
You got it, guys. Be good.
All right. Take care.
Thanks again to Sam Amick of USA Today. Good stuff from him. You know, great words, obviously, about Isaiah Thomas. Who, you know, despite playing for Cleveland, Sherrod, I think we still are rooting for IT to come back.
I am pulling for the Brinks truck to pull up in his backyard, front yard, driveway, street, around the whole block. Because he's a hard guy not to like.
Right.
Even before all the things that, you know, kind of really kind of threw his life, you know, in a crazy space, dealing with all the adversity. He's just a likable dude. I mean, and it's not just the media. It's not just coaches. I mean, just Joe Blow on the street loves Isaiah Thomas.
How much will Isaiah – what's the kind of difference he'll make for Cleveland? Because defensively, they're still going to be bad. But I feel like offensively, they're going to be so hard to guard. If you add a shooter, too, like Isaiah Thomas, a guy that can knock down threes.
Their offense is going to have to be their best defense. Yep. They're going to have to be kind of like Golden State was. Really, before Golden State embraced the defensive principles that we see them have right now. They're going to need Isaiah Thomas to generate offense, whether it's creating his own shot, be more of a catch-and-shoot guy. Because when you play with LeBron and you're a catch-and-shoot guy, you're going to put up big numbers because he's going to get you the ball in rhythm when you're open because he draws so much attention. So he's going to help them. But to me, the tricky question is, one, how much is he going to help them? Two, will the guys that are on the floor with him and LeBron, are they going to accept the roles that they're going to need to play? Because if you've got LeBron being the facilitator, you've got Isaiah Thomas as that primary option LeBron is looking offensively.
Yeah.
I need someone who's going to get offensive rebounds.
Tristan Thompson.
I need someone who is going to create space as far as ball movement or movement without the ball so that teams aren't going to just be able to kind of stand around and load up. I need guys who are going to embrace those roles. Cleveland has guys with those skills, but are they willing to embrace those skills with Isaiah?
Your boy Jay Crowder.
What about my boy Jay
Crowder? He'll embrace that role. He'll be a defender, you know, get the loose balls, the dirty stuff. Tristan Thompson, rebounding. You know, when I look at the Cavs and I think of their final five, the guys who are coming in to, you know, finish the game once Isaiah comes back. Isaiah, LeBron, Kevin Love, Tristan Thompson. And who's that fifth guy? Do you go offense, J.R. Smith? Do you go D-Wade?
You
got to
keep that fifth spot open depending on who got to go in that night.
Yeah.
Sometimes it could be D-Wade. I could see it being Korver. I could see it being Shumpert.
Crowder, maybe. Yeah. That's the thing about Cleveland. They're deep. They just got to get on the same page.
Well, they got to get on the same page, and they got to play hard.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm watching them play. They're not playing hard. That is why they're where they are. They're not playing hard, and that's the beautiful thing about Isaiah Thomas. He may not be a great defender. He may not even be a good defender, but he's going to play hard at both ends of the floor. You don't have to worry about his effort, and if you're not playing hard, in some way, shape, or form, he's going to let you know, whether it's in the game or in the locker room at halftime.
He'll call you out, right? You're going to hear about it.
LeBron will have his back, so now all of a sudden, what you going to say?
Right.
What you going to say? What you going to say now?
Hey, I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to let Scal and Brad Stevens do the talking right now. Scal had a chance to sit down with the Celtics coach. They talked about the big three. You really haven't had the big three at all this season.
5 minutes.
Exactly. But still, the Celtics have been able to overcome. Here's Scal with Coach Brad.
So, like a guy like Jaylen Brown, or let's use Jason Tatum, but both those guys come into a situation where you're already winning. You've dealt with some guys coming in and you're like, you're struggling just to get there. Like, do you think that they appreciate all the work that has gone in to even get to this point?
Maybe it's probably a little bit, it'd be a little bit eye-opening to not be in a group that was so connected or that, you know, had its ups and downs. But hey, we're gonna have our ups and downs. Yeah. The long season demands that. It's how you respond to that, and you know, we're gonna have it, and at that time I think they'll have a greater appreciation even for you know, the older guys and how steady they are and how they're able to not only respond to, you know, a good streak but a bad one.
If I told you, like, coach, I'm looking into the future and you're big time free agents out for the season, the guy you traded for Isaiah Thomas has a broken face, and Al Horford is out with a concussion. You would think, man, what? We're struggling right now?
Yeah. Yeah, but I think it's a testament to, again, everybody pulling in one direction. Just because Gordon's out doesn't mean Gordon's not involved. When Kyrie's out doesn't mean he's not involved. You know, when Al's out, he's still talking to all the young guys. Like, you know, we all have a responsibility both on and off the court to try to make this go in the right direction. And, you know, regardless of who plays, everybody knows what they need to do to play well. And that's something that usually takes a little bit of time. But sometimes with younger guys, it becomes very, you know, hey, this is what you do well right now, and let's just stick to that. And then we'll add to it as time goes on because of your work, and you'll catch up to the speed of the game and all that other stuff.
Now, you know, the year that you went through and you had 27 trades that year and now having some stability, is there comfort knowing that, like, this is roster's intact and this is the team we have going forward? Or did you kind of feel that way even when amongst all the trades that were going on back then? How much different is it now?
Well, I would have thought going into the summer that we probably had a lot of stability
and
continuity.
Point, right?
So I think that we've been even, you know, through that time, and you, even when you watch last year's team on offense, you can see the stability and continuity. Mm-hmm. You can see it on plays that we're missing sometimes this year right now, and hopefully we get to the point where we're better later to make the right plays and to read off one another and be more instinctual rather than reactive and those type of things. But I think continuity is a big, big bonus. But I think that the value of having a couple of guys back that really are, you know, signaling all the right signals and sending all the right messages, you know, has helped us early on.
All right. Thanks, Coach.
All right, Scal and Stevens right there. The Celtics winning streak now, Sherrod, at 14 games. They got a three-game road trip coming up beginning Saturday at Atlanta. I'm going to put you on the spot, big fella.
Let's go.
How long will this streak go? I'm going to name the games. You tell me which game they are going to lose.
This ain't going to be long, Drace. I'm going to just let you know that now.
Atlanta.
W for the green team.
Dallas.
That's where they're going to have a hiccup.
Wins does Dallas have?
They've
two?
Got two.
Okay.
They've
okay.
got two. That team has been so bad all season. What are the odds that they're going to get it right one night and the Celtics are going to be gone? When you look at the way they streak, you look at the way the Celtics are streaking, it seems inevitable that that's going to be the game where the Celtics have a slip-up. And make no mistake about it. Boston is a better team.
Yes,
than Dallas.
No doubt. Did you know I'm going on the road? So I'll be in there for that Dallas game, big fella.
So you can
so if they lose that game, I'm blaming
gonna be your
you.
Fault. No, it's going to be your fault because you're going to be in the building.
I need the Celtics to win while I'm on the road. They might not ever let me on the road again if they start losing.
I'm
going to
hit Walt up and just let him know. Make sure if y'all lose, Kyle is to blame.
All right, A'Sherrod Blakely, good stuff. Make sure you subscribe on all your favorite podcasting apps. Please leave us a rating and a review. That'll do it for this week's edition of the Celtics Talk Podcast. Thanks a lot to Sam Amick, Scal, and Coach Stevens. For A'Sherrod Blakely, I'm Kyle Draper. We'll see you next time.
We out!